Good evening, everyone. This is T.C. Tompkins back with you another week. Thank God I made it here with another week of Music and Conversations. We want to do our disclaimer. The views and opinions stated on this show are that of myself and my guest and not that of the station, its management, or the owners. So how is everyone doing? I hope that everyone had a great holiday weekend. I keep forgetting this is a holiday weekend, so everybody will be off tomorrow. We are sort of celebrating today. That's the good word, because we got word that one of my clients' projects went to number 29 bullet. I'm going to speak on that momentarily. I want to welcome my guest, my good friend Tony Wathawan, my attorney. Hey, good friend.
Hey, TC, how are you, brother?
I'm good, my brother. I will be talking to Tony about his practice and the entertainment business, and also he's a criminal attorney, which I may need at one point.
Let's hope not.
But I wanted to congratulate Colleen Caruso for her top 20 record. It's not quite top 20 yet. It's number 29 bullet on the UAC charts.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I heard that this was the first Houston artist that had had a top record in the top 30 in some time. And that's probably on the national charts. That's probably true. I also wanted to tell a friend of mine that I'm not stupid, that I realize the importance of social media. But social media from Brazil has no bearing on the UAC USA Urban AC charts. Okay, I congratulate everybody in what they do. I try to stay out of other people's lane, and I wish they would stay out of mine. Okay, that's what I had to say about that. I also want to thank Cheryl Cozy for having the belief in her daughter's material enough to hire me, Caruso. Yeah, enough to hire me. And thank Tina Knowles for giving me the amen. I appreciate that. And happy birthday to Beyonce, Lady B. Okay, I had to make sure I put that in my notes. Okay?
Oh, wow, today's her birthday? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my daughters made sure I said that today, that I made sure I said hello to Beyonce. Okay? And Tony.
Yes,
good
sir.
Good to you. How you doing today, man?
I am excellente, brother. How are you?
I'm great. Matter of fact, you know what? Before I brought you on here, we were speaking about a case that we have in common. Where we want to talk. We want to talk about the justice system.
Yeah, it's the civil justice system, not the criminal.
Not the criminal.
I am a huge proponent for the criminal justice system. It is the civil law, the civil system that I have decided, and I've actually been working over the last 3 to 4 years to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is I don't like doing civil cases anymore. And what I mean by civil cases is breach of contract,
mm-hmm.
misrepresentation, fraud. You know, I still do my personal injury, but most of those, you know, it settles with the insurance company, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll tell you, TC, the real reason why I don't like doing civil law, and to all the civil attorneys out there, you know, you guys, you have a very difficult job. I am not saying that you don't. It is very difficult. There's a lot of research. There's a lot of time and effort that goes into it. And, you know, very rarely do you see the exact same thing over again. You know, as a criminal defense attorney, it's very possible somebody gets a DWI and I see very similar facts again. Usually because there are two parties fighting over a contract or something like that, you know, facts are always a little different.
Mm-hmm.
So civil attorneys definitely have a very difficult, and I never would say otherwise. But the thing is, like I was telling you, TC, suppose me and you want to sue somebody for 150 grand, okay? We go after them. We win 150 grand. How am I supposed to collect that money for you in Texas, brother? There's no garnishing of wages here in Texas. The only thing I can do is I can pull an abstract of judgment for you, pray that the person that we sued and won a judgment against has some kind of property that I can put a lien against, and then hope that they sell it within the next 20 or 25 years so that we can actually collect it for you.
Well, you know, we were talking about, because you represented me a couple of times.
Yes.
With a client I had. I used to work
with all success, too.
Yeah.
All success.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I had a client, I think it was 2006.
It was a long time ago. About 10 years ago.
Yeah. Called BSE Records. They had an artist called Erica Kane. Okay, they had a girl named Erica K. I did an outstanding job for
Very
them.
Very good job.
Okay, kept that artist number one independent artist for 14 consecutive months. Got them 2 distribution deals. Okay, got them placed in Walmarts. Got them all kind of major stuff, and they sued every person
that
I introduced them to.
It was a ridiculous case, and the main reason why it was ridiculous was, you're right, they sued another party.
They sued MVD.
They sued MVD, and we got pulled in as a third-party
defendant.
They sued
Sony, where it won that we got pulled in.
Exactly. Yeah. Sony pulled us in as a third-party defendant.
Right.
And the funny thing about this is Sony's attorney and I would speak over the phone about a lot of things. But we didn't have a lot of correspondence. And I explained to him that, you know, the basis of this whole entire... Actually, you know, he explained it to me. The basis of this whole entire lawsuit was about digital rights.
Mm-hmm.
Did we have digital rights to distribute their music
records,
digitally?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And obviously, TC's very, very good at keeping all of his records, and so am I. And I've been working with TC... since the day I started becoming as an attorney.
That's true.
Yeah, you were my first.
You're my first attorney.
Yeah,
here
you were
Houston.
My first client. You and Emilian. Both of you guys were both my first clients. But thank you to my mentor, Ricky Anderson.
Oh, absolutely. My man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I explained to him because, you know, TC keeps his records, he keeps his contracts. He's a very, very organized individual. He made it very easy on me. He sent me the digital rights contract and was like, T, I don't know what they're talking about. Here's a contract right here.
Plus, I had canceled checks that he.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We had canceled checks showing that, you know, whatever. The proof was all there. And I explained that to Sony's attorney. I was like, there's no reason to settle with BSE. I mean, we should be fighting this to the very end.
Mm-hmm.
I have the proof right here. And I asked him several times. And not only that,
I
but other attorneys.
You called me.
Yes.
They told me, oh, we straight. Don't worry about it.
Other attorneys. I was like, I have this contract. Do you want me to send it to you? No, I don't need it right now.
Yeah.
And this didn't just happen with me. This happened with a previous attorney of yours as well.
I hired another attorney in Connecticut
to
represent me. He had tried to contact Sony 2 or 3 times. They told him they no need. We got this. You know, no worries, blah, blah, blah. And the next time they contacted him was to make him aware that they had
settled
with BSE.
And the funny thing was the first time they had the mediation, it was just about hearing BSE's number.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I told him, hey, I'll chime in on phone. I don't need to actually physically come all the way out there and waste all my clients' money on, you know, travel and all that. And we were fine. They offered a ridiculous number. We were like, nope, no thank you.
Yeah,
we're
half
leaving.
A million.
Yeah.
That's what they wanted.
They wanted $500,000 for digital rights that they actually gave you. That's mm-hmm. what was ridiculous. But anyways, I continuously told Sony's attorney, I have this contract for you. He was like, yeah, I'll get it from you later. I'll get it from you later, this and that. Then it started going into the actual Connecticut court, so we hired that Connecticut attorney who does an amazing job.
Great attorney.
Great attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, what happened basically was... knowing that we had the contract.
They never contacted
me. They never contacted me, never asked for the contract, and I'll tell you why. I know why. And the reason being is because he felt that in their contract, in BSE's contract with TC, he used to say to me on the phone, and I explained to him this was not right either. He was like, oh, there's an indemnification clause.
Mm-hmm.
There's an indemnification clause. Indemnification if my client has done something wrong. My client's not going to indemnify you if he hasn't done anything wrong. Yep. My client had the rights.
But, you know, Ricky was telling me, which was this, they had came after me 3 times or 4 times
mm-hmm.
and couldn't get a case against me. So they figured Sony would scare easier, and they sued Sony.
Mm-hmm.
So Sony just settled. Now, if Sony's listening, I got no intentions of paying them for that money. So they just wasted that money. But that... You know, that's a perfect example of civil law.
Exactly. That is a perfect example of civil law. What they did on purpose was they went off the they went after the people with the deeper pockets,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't want to, you know, spend all the litigation money on it and stuff, which BSE obviously knew would happen. And now this is my theory on what they were doing, you know what I mean? They knew that they would eventually just be like, screw it.
Make
let's
them
settle.
Go away.
Yeah.
That's their
make
strategy.
Them go away.
And you know what? And Ricky had said that, though.
Yeah.
In the beginning, he said, T, you're never going to get rid of these people. They're just going to keep coming back until somebody said, you know, let's give them some money to make them go
away. Exactly. And that's what I don't appreciate. That's what I don't appreciate about the civil world. And now, yes, there's always post-judgment. People go, you hire an attorney for post-judgment work, which literally means going and getting the money that you already got a judgment for, which doesn't make sense to me. Yeah. But on the other side, something that I'm very passionate about that I practice, you know, religiously, that I, you know, in criminal court 3 to 5 times a week, is I'm a criminal defense attorney. The reason why I appreciate that world, like I was telling you, is at the end of the day, at the end of the criminal case, I look at my client and I've given him a resolution. Okay. Either I've done an amazing job and we have won, he gets a dismissal, he's going home to his family, I was able to prove his innocence, or they were not able to prove his guilt, or we see that they do have evidence against you.
Yeah.
You know, a young kid.
One way or the other, it's
absolutely.
It's an answer.
And you know, I am all about proper punishment as well. Look, at the end of the day, as a criminal defense attorney, we are constitutionalists. Okay, and I believe that if somebody does something wrong, all the time, I get a 19-year-old kid. He may get caught with a little bit of pot, something like that. We take that into, you know, the DA. I tell the DA, look. He did it wrong. We see that. He got caught with, you know, this drug. We understand that. Let's not ruin the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Let's put him on probation for a year and then dismiss.
Okay. Well, look, we're going to be talking to Tony a lot more. We're going to take a little break here, play a commercial, and play some music. Okay? Okay. We'll be right back.
Hunger and homelessness is 365, not just on holidays. Give to support the bread of life. Amazing. 102.5 FM.
We'll be right back. salvation is near this time. Can you feel it now? So brothers and sisters, shall we know how?
Under Music and Conversation, so you can go to iTunes and download any of these interviews. I've gotten some pretty good downloads. I'm pretty thankful about that too. I really appreciate you guys' support. You know what? I wanted to talk about something else too before I get back to Tony and the law, and it may be something in me. You know, I think there's a age discrimination thing in black music. I know that I was talking to Emilian about this. Mm. Okay. Now, here I am with almost 50 years of experience in the industry. Okay. And as much as people think there are new things in the business, there's really nothing really new in the business. Mm. I had a couple of guys tell me that when I first got in the music business, Dave Clark and Bunker Shepherd told me that the music business will never change. I thought they were full of BS. You know, I thought they read it and they're just old timers. Because, right. Really, you know, when you're young, you think you know everything anyway. So I thought they didn't know what they were talking about. You know, I said it's going to be new stuff, new CDs, new 8-tracks, new cassettes, new CD, you know, new digital, you know. But see, all those are really delivery means. That's
distribution.
That's all it is delivery.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Nothing about the art of the music business has changed from the time the first person played music on a cello or whatever they did in Greek or whatever, okay? Mm. It is an emotional business that people react off of emotions. If you do not pull out any emotions out of your audience, you will be a no-selling artist, okay?
Absolutely.
And have a short career. Yeah. But just because I'm an older person, you know, I'm not stupid. And I want people to stop thinking I am. You know, I've done this all my life. It's just like a surgeon that has done over a million procedures. You know, I can do this in my sleep, okay? And I know what I'm talking about when I predict certain sounds and predict what will happen at radio stations and things of that nature. I know radio just like I'm a program director. That's all I've ever done, you know?
Yeah.
So I better know something about it. I need to change my business. You know, one of the two. But I did want to congratulate Caroline because a lot of people felt like we would not get here with her with that project. And I want to thank Urban AC Radio for their support. The fact that Urban AC Radio has embraced this track proves that I was correct in my judgment of the track and how it should be mixed and how she should be perceived as an artist. That does not mean that she can't change her look, her style, or her music at any point. You know, all any artist is a like a solar light. You know, you got to just stay within your beam. Okay. As long as you stay inside your beam or your cushion of your sound, or your elements, you'll always stay creatively positive and creatively good, just like Sade. You know, her music basically hasn't changed in
how long?
20 years.
Wayne, you were the one that brought her over. Yeah,
absolutely. 20 years.
How long ago was that when you brought her over?
It was in the 80s. It was in the 80s. So, you know, art doesn't change. You know, the perception of it, the style of it, or the look of it, or something like that doesn't change. But it's still being judged by another human. You know, I don't care what they say about digital delivery and fans and things like that. They're fans are a person to artist basis. You know, they get involved with the material. They get involved with the music.
Absolutely.
Okay? They get involved with your look or whatever it is about you that is your marketing corner. And hopefully you got more than one of them. Hopefully you got a look and a sound to go with it, you know? So,
and you gotta have that passion about it.
Absolutely. And have that passion. Absolutely. So, Tony, tell us how you started in the law business.
Law business. I went to, started in 2005 at Texas Southern University, Thurgood Marshall School of Law.
Okay.
Let's hear it. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, at HBCU. Let's hear it. One of the best decisions I ever made in my life.
Really?
Because
you're not from Houston, though, are you?
No, I am. I grew up in Sugar Land, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I went to school in Kansas City. I did my undergrad and my MBA when I was in Kansas City.
Okay.
Worked out there a lot. Did some financial brokering out there. Mm-hmm. And after I got into my MBA, I knew I wanted to go to law school. Joined a law firm. You know, I became their little rat, had to run around, mm-hmm. do everything they wanted. Got to learn the ropes, though.
Gopher. That's right, baby.
Exactly. I was a gopher. Absolutely. I have picked up donuts and coffee mm-hmm. quite a few times in my day. But thereafter, I got into Thurgood Marshall, and I started there. Some of the closest, best friends and colleagues that a person can ever ask for that I'm still close with till this day.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, being there, one of my biggest highlights, one of the biggest parts of my career was getting a chance to not only be in his class, but obviously being mentored by attorney Ricky Anderson.
Big dog.
Big dog.
Yeah. but you know, like Tony, when we met, were you just setting up your practice?
Yep. We met in 2008.
Uh-huh.
I took the bar early, which was the craziest thing to possibly do. Sell out a whole entire load of classes and stuff. Took the bar early. By the grace of God, passed.
Uh-huh.
Recently after that, I talked to Ricky, and Ricky was like, you know, you got it in you. You're a businessman. You're smart. These are his words, not mine. Mm-hmm. And he was like, go out and, you know, hang your own shingle. Mm-hmm. And
it didn't take you long, though, because I remember, man.
No, I was a hustler.
When we were sharing those offices on Walker, South Parkway.
Yeah, Walker Entertainment.
For Walker Entertainment.
Yeah, our boy Ertis.
Uh-huh. And I know I left. You were still there.
Yeah.
In the,
I was there for about a good 6 months to a year.
Okay. But, man, you considering, though, Tony, that's not a lot of time.
No, over the past 8 years, I have been very fortunate by the grace of God. My parents' prayers and blessings, mm-hmm. and of course, I've gotten to work with great people. The Water One Law Firm is growing exponentially in a great way. We just partnered with Duke and Sterling as well. They're an entertainment and sports management company.
Okay.
We're managing projects. We're managing sports UFC fighters. My girl, Valentina Shevchenko, she's number 3 right now at UFC. She just recently beat Holly Holm, getting set up to hopefully fight the number 1 right now, mm-hmm. Nunez. So good things are down the pipeline, man. I've just been real fortunate, you know, and what I mean by that is the people that did mentor me or did teach me, they taught me a lot, and I've followed their advice, and it's led me down the right path. And then, of course, I got great clients man.
You know what? I mean, we're just struck it off as friends. I mean, you're a great person.
We're family, brother.
I've always liked you. And wish you the best. I just thank God. I mean, that I have not really needed you that much.
Yeah, you're right. You know, we've done transactions.
Yeah, matter of fact, you did handle my first case. You know, there's a funny thing about it. But I do believe that there are always obstacles in anything you try to do, because I've been in the industry now 40, 50 years. Yep. I've never been sued.
Never.
I had never
been
sued. And I've worked with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know? First time I got sued was here in Houston, Texas. Yeah, and you represented
that.
Me.
Yeah, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
Another success story.
Absolutely. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, man.
But hey, man, you know what? I mean, It's just part of the business.
It is. It's definitely part of the business. I mean, look, at the end of the day, what is the entertainment business? It's a bunch of people with a lot of passion for this craft.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're passionate about something, attitudes and get in the way, right? And that's exactly what it is.
Oh, yeah.
People are very, especially when you talk about dealing with artists in every single realm, being actor, music, mm-hmm. position, authorship, whatever it may be. They're passionate about their craft, right? And so when you're working with somebody who's so passionate about their craft like that, it's not 1 + 1 = 2 anymore.
I know.
There's so many more variables that mm-hmm. get thrown in there. And especially that's the difference of being on the business side versus being on the actual production side.
Well, you know, I mean, the one true good thing, though, about being an attorney, you do have, like, rules.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you have, you know, bylaws and things that are all written down. Everything is basically structured.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's all structured.
Absolutely.
Now, the music business is not like
that. It's not.
No, it's not like that.
And that's why entertainment law is the one sector of, mm-hmm. well, not the only one, but I think one of the sectors in the legal industry that isn't structured like that.
Uh-huh.
I can go, when I'm doing a criminal defense case, I can go to the Code of Criminal Procedures and see what I need
Absolutely.
To do. There is no entertainment code or procedure.
No. I know that. I wish there were.
It'd make our lives a lot easier, wouldn't it?
Huh?
It'd make our lives a lot easier.
Absolutely. You were talking about you're involved with a case now. Can you talk about it?
Yeah, absolutely. I can a little bit about it. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's already out there. We've gotten a lot of coverage over it. Unfortunately, right now I'm actually in litigation against Rosenberg Police Department.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We had an incident a while ago. It was about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. With two of my clients, an elderly Hispanic couple. I won't throw any names out there or anything today. We've had enough coverage on the case mm-hmm. as it is. But unfortunately, they, in our opinion, had a lot of their civil rights violated. Mm-hmm. One of the big things is not only was there, do I feel we had a civil rights claim, but in my opinion, the biggest factor of the case was that we have an extreme excessive force problem here.
Mm-hmm.
My clients were assaulted by the cops. My clients were repeatedly pummeled by the cops.
Mm.
We have it all on video. We've got national syndication for it. And what actually initially happened in this case was that several felony cases and misdemeanor cases, both, were placed against my clients, their son, who was videotaping everything, mm-hmm. the cops, you know, violating mm-hmm. their constitutional rights. And slowly, it took us over a year, but we got all those cases dismissed. Decided to settle on one of them. It was a resisting arrest charge, mm-hmm. whatever. We went ahead and settled on it. But everything else was, of course, dismissed because my clients weren't in the wrong. And then now we went back after, and now we are in litigation with Rosenberg. The sad part about it is when I look at the video, I see this elderly couple being assaulted by the cops. I'm a constitutionalist. Like I've said it before, and I say it a lot, I say it all the time, criminal defense attorneys in general, we vow to uphold the Constitution in this country. Mm-hmm. What bothers me is, you know, my father's always wanted me to be an attorney. I've always wanted to be an attorney. My father believes in the law as well. I have to look at my father, a man that wanted me to go to law school, a man that paid for me to go to law school, a man that put me through law school. I have to look at him now and tell him that, Dad, if you're driving down the road, you get pulled over. You know, my dad's 70 years old.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so I have to tell my dad.
Act a certain way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Dad, when you're driving down, not even act a certain way. Mm-hmm. If you're driving down the road, you get pulled over by a cop and he's violating your constitutional rights, let him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me tell you how much that bothers me, because as a constitutionalist, I should be able to tell my father, if your constitutional rights are being violated, you should be able to tell the officer, officer, I respect your authority, yeah. but I respectfully decline to do something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
I respectfully decline to...
Right don't mean right, baby.
Exactly.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from.
And so now I have to tell my dad, let him... because I don't want you, and I'm sorry to put it like this, but this is the only way you can, I don't want you to get the crap kicked out of you.
Yeah, but that, you, I want to ask you something. I'm probably a little bit, I haven't had any problems, matter of fact, since I've been here in Texas. I grew up in East Texas, so I know about Texas law, okay? But I've been bothered by any of the Houston police or anything, because I'm an older black man now. Shit, what the hell am I going to be doing? I got gray in my beard. You know, I'm not a rowdy teenager. But I do notice that the Sugar Land police are real cool, man. I've been pulled over now at least 3 times or 4 times since I've been here, and since I moved to Sugar Land.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'll say one thing. There is not, I would never ever say the police are bad. I would never ever say.
Oh, they're always some good ones. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. And, absolutely. You know, I'd even go as far to say maybe a majority of them. You know, and I would definitely never say Rosenberg PD is bad. I don't believe that. I believe maybe some of the training practices that they've had that they put some of their officers through, especially, unfortunately, some of the officers that my clients have had to deal with, there might be problems there. I'm not going to say that every officer in the Rosenberg Police Department is bad. Absolutely not. I've had them help me in my life. Remember, I grew up in Sugar Land.
Okay. Well, I know, though, you know, being a cop and having that gun on you, you know, having that heat on you can give you some kind of courage, power. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And having that badge on, because I mean, it's as bad as it was, and I remember back when in the 60s or something, when I was really trying to get, I was just getting out of college,
right,
trying to find a job.
Absolutely.
You know, I even went in and interviewed for being a cop. Now, can you
what?
See? Oh yeah. I absolutely.
TC?
They told me I was too tall. Thank God. Thank God.
See, TC wilding out if he was a cop.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'd be hard, baby. I'd be hard. I want to get that girl. I want to play our young lady, Colleen Caruso. I like this track. It's a hit record. Number 29 Bullet, baby.
You said you love me. You said you need me. Where are you, baby? What's happening to me? I've been waiting on for you. Can't seem to get no time from you. I think you think I can't handle the truth, but all this here, it just ain't to you, 'cause the truth is, I got hitters, yeah, I got hitters, more hitters than you got, yeah, the truth is, I got hitters, yeah, I got hitters, more hitters than you got, don't get it twisted, yeah, I like you, I like might you. Even love you, but I can easily walk away from you. I'm trying to say it. You're the one I wanted. So you better jump on it, on it, on it, on it. I've been waiting around for you. Can't seem to get no time from you. I think you think I can't handle the truth. But all this here, it just ain't up to you. 'Cause the truth is, hitters than you got, yeah, the truth is, I got hitters, yeah, I got hitters, more hitters than you got, don't get it twisted, yeah, I like you, might even love you, but I could easily walk away from you.
Colleen Caruso, her hit record, True Feels. He's trying to tell me, he's asking me, why would anybody tell me that?
Yeah, that was beautiful. Her voice is amazing.
Well, she's an excellent artist. She has great vocal skills. It's just that they were marketing her as a hip-hop artist. They were doing some chopping screw on that track. I just felt that that track did not fit that format or that genre.
Made sense.
Yeah, so we wanted to work at Urban AC. And it's been doing pretty good. I'm pleased to say that it is doing pretty good. We're going to probably put our man Kendall on the last 10 minutes of the show today. I have an interview here with one of the premier attorneys in Atlanta, Georgia, an entertainment attorney.
Nice.
Kendall. Matter of fact, Kendall and I worked together back when I was working with Teddy Riley and Guy. And today, and Big Bubba, and all of them. I had to say good hello to Big Bub and all of them. So you're involved with a civil suit now. Is that a civil suit?
Yeah, well, yes, it is a civil suit. It's a civil suit against Rosenberg PD and okay. those officers that were involved in the incident. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for the next year,
yeah, how
two
long
years,
has it been going on?
When well, we just, we finally, we, I mean, because when it first happened, mm-hmm. you know, we, obviously, you have to file and put them on notice of the fact that, you know, you will be filing the suit. We just filed the suit about 3 or 4 months ago.
Okay.
So the process will probably take a little over a year because as of right now, what's going on is there's a lot of back and forth between us and their attorneys, mm-hmm. right? They're trying to strike down some because, you know, you sue them for multiple different offenses.
Oh, yeah.
And they're trying to strike down some of them, which they probably will be able to. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of things they're not going to be able to.
Tons of stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And that video, which, you know, anybody can see, it's online. It's on our Facebook page, the 101 Law Firm. Mm. It's a brutal video. So if you do go watch it, you know, prepare yourself for that because you do see an elderly Hispanic woman getting pretty much slammed to the ground by a young, strapping 35-40-year-old male officer.
I mean, I don't understand. And maybe, you know, I don't understand. Maybe it's just fear that police officers sometimes go through.
I'm not going to say that they have an easy job.
No, it's a tough.
It's a
that's
very,
a tough
very
gig,
tough job. Yeah. You know, especially being in those intense situations. Mm-hmm. But and see, that's why sometimes I don't know if it's to put the blame on the officer himself or the mm-hmm. training that they went through, because yeah. that's the reason why they put these officers through such extensive training, mental and yeah. physical training, is because of what they're doing, the
yeah,
type
the
of
stress,
job that they
the
take on.
The stress of the everyday job.
Absolutely.
It seems like, though, we've just had a ton of overreactions of just kicking it up to the next level for no reason. I was just talking to you before we went on the air here. Some guy in San Francisco or somewhere got shot for not paying his bus fare.
Yeah, and some other gentleman just recently got shot because when he was getting out of the car, his officer asked him to. He was an elderly gentleman.
Uh-huh.
He had a cane. The officer thought the cane was a gun, and he shot him.
Is it something in the water? I mean, what is going on, man?
You know, and that's why I ask myself all the time, is it that this has always been going on, but we have video cameras
yeah,
now?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I tell my wife that all the time. I think that it's been going on all the time because I very seldom tell anybody about this. When I was a kid back in East Texas, I guess I was about 15,
right,
16 years old. I've always been almost this size. I was always
yeah.
weighed about 210,
yeah.
6'2", 6'4", somewhere around in that area, even in high school. And I'm walking down the street in Atlanta, Texas, mm-hmm. and a bunch of cops drove by in a car, stuck a shotgun out the window, and just pointed it at me. Now, you know, I mean, that was traumatic. It was traumatic, okay? Yeah, just pointed it at me as a threat, you know. But I wasn't surprised, you know. I mean, living in a town of 5,000 people and there being a certain area of the city where, you know, people of color stayed. They used to call it the hill when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And You know, but all in all, it wasn't a bad sort. But I know when I came back from Vietnam, I was an entirely different person. Mm-hmm. So I'm thank God it didn't happen after that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because I reacted in an entirely different way. I had a boy pull a gun out on me at a Dairy Queen one time in Atlanta, Texas. I went home, got my gun.
Yeah, okay.
It came back. But my wife would tell you, I was real. When I came back from Vietnam, man, I was real crazy. I guess that would be the best way.
You were cold.
Yeah, that was the best way. That would be the best way to put it. I was just a different person, you know. Yeah.
You know, and you hear about that. Mm-hmm. That's obvious racism.
Oh, I was, yeah.
And racism comes in several different. It's not just against one sect of people. I've seen racism in several different sects. I've seen it with the Hispanic mm-hmm. community. I've seen it with the Black community. I've seen it in my own community. And I've happened had it oh, happen yeah. to me. A month after 9/11, when I was 19 years old,
mm-hmm.
I was. I'll Thought never forget this. I was in. We were down by in A-Leaf.
Uh-huh.
I was with a couple of my buddies. All of us around my age. One of the guys that was with us was one of my buddy's little brother. He's 15 years old. So it was me, an 18-year-old, another 19-year-old, and a 15-year-old, and another 18-year-old. We're at Denny's. We leave Denny's. I'm actually in my dad's car. And mind you, my dad's car at the time was a Cadillac. It was a green Cadillac. Okay, mm-hmm. So it wasn't even like, I mean, I'm not saying it was the nicest thing in the world, but it wasn't a rundown car by any means or whatever.
Cream puff.
It was beautiful. It was actually a beautiful car, to be real honest. That was nice. So I'm in my, because I'm down from Kansas City for the weekend, right? I'm here just hanging out with some buddies. We're at Denny's late night. We're like, hey, let's go back to his place and play some video games. Because this is what we did when we were 19, you know what I mean? So we leave Denny's. We're going down the street, and I'm at the light waiting for to make a left turn. And I didn't notice a cop was behind me, okay? Mm-hmm. But to go straight light, turned green before the turn left light did. So I thought, okay, hey, why don't I just, it's late at night, nobody's around, I'll go straight, make a U-turn, and then make a right turn, you know, mm-hmm. same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as soon as I did that, boom, lights came on, I got pulled over, and I was like, okay, hey, maybe I wasn't allowed to do that, maybe that, you know, did something wrong.
Turn.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Maybe it was an illegal turn or something. Man, I have never experienced something like that before. Beam of light comes into the car, driver, put your hands out the window, pull me out. Three other cop cars showed up after that. All of us had guns put to the back of our backs. A little, and what bothered me the most was I was 19. It was bad for me, but a little 15-year-old kid had to go through this.
Yeah.
That was with us.
Yeah.
We all got cuffed, thrown in the back of these cars. And at the end of it all, what the cop said to me is what resonated with me and bothered me the most.
Uh-huh.
He looked at me, and I go, "Officer, what was it that I did wrong?" And he was like, "You actually didn't do anything wrong. Your turn looks suspicious to me." A suspicious turn needs four other cops, guns to my back.
Your turn looks suspicious, man. I got to watch you on the turn.
I know, right? Handcuffed, thrown in the back of these cars, guns put to the back of our backs, four other cars coming out with, and when uh-huh. you're saying four other cops, that means eight cops are here.
Mm-hmm.
For four of us small, and I'm a big dude, but the rest of my little Indian friends are these skinny little kids.
Yeah.
What are we going to, you know, I get home and I tell my dad about it the next day. My dad is livid. "Why didn't you tell me? You should have told me. We should have done something." My mom, on the other hand, being the sweet woman, Eastern cultured mm-hmm. little wife that she is, she looks at me, "No, you did the right thing. You got out of there safe.
Absolutely.
You came home.
That's right.
You had nothing to hide."
Mom was right.
Oh, absolutely.
So, but my mom is telling me when I was 19 what now I have to tell my father.
That's right. That's right.
And I have been taught. I have been bred. I have uh-huh. gone through law school. I have studied the Constitution to not have to allow my rights to be mm-hmm. to be violated.
It's better to live.
Exactly.
It's
Wait,
better to live.
That's what worries me.
Yeah.
That's what worries me the most is my little nephew. I look at him. He's 2 years old right now. He's growing up in this world and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when he's hanging out when he's 17, 18, 19 years old with a couple of his knuckleheaded little friends?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
How is he going to handle the situation? That's what worries me so much. Am I going to be able to teach him as his uncle enough to know to how to handle this situation. And these situations are so sensitive that the one minor small detail can totally change everything.
Hey man, I'm gonna tell you something. I was in, when I got back from Vietnam, I was stationed in Fort Stewart, Georgia. Okay. And all my boys and I, my wife came down there to visit me, and I was over the officer's quarters. I used to run the officer's quarters, so I had a real smooth job, didn't have to do anything. But me and my boys, I had all my boys, was from, one was from Philadelphia, one from New York, one from, they're all northern guys. So right. We were all out in the car one day. When nothing down there in down in Fort Stewart, Georgia. I mean, this is back in the boonies in Georgia. So nothing but a lot of little bitty towns. So we got pulled over in one of those little towns. I've forgotten what we did, but we all got put in, went to jail.
Right.
And they all went to jail because they were northern black men. And the only reason why we got out of it is I was a southern boy. Ugh. And I understood the South and talked to those cops the way they wanted me to. And they let us go. But man, they pulled us over. They put us through the paces. They searched the car. They jacked us up. They handcuffed us, took us to jail. Matter of fact, I got one better for you than this. I was living in Teaneck, New Jersey. Okay. Mm-hmm. Vice president of Epic Records at CBS. Driving a brand new black Mercedes with saddle interior. Oh, it was late. Ooh. Okay. Yeah. Okay. It was late. So me and my wife were going through, I don't know if it was Fort Bend. Fort Lee.
Yeah, Fort Lee.
Somewhere up in that area, I was on my way to go to work.
Right.
And we drove and saw up the highway there, it was a roadblock. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm late for getting to the office. So, you know, me and my dumb behind, I did a U-turn to miss the roadblock.
Right.
Try to get through quicker. Man, they had cops mammy on us. They took me, my wife, all of us down to jail. So they thought I was a drug dealer. They told me I was a drug dealer. That they had been after me, and my wife will witness this, that they had been after me before. They seen me in Beautiful. That Mercedes. That's right. We know what you look for. You've done this before on one of our other roadblocks. I said, you've got me confused with you. Well, where did you get that car from? And what so and so and so. But let me tell you something. Now, my wife will witness this too. The whole attitude changed because I had a CBS ID.
Yep.
And I pulled out my CBS ID and told them I was vice president over CBS. He did not believe me. He called the number on my ID card and found out that I was actually vice president of Epic Records. Now, you want to see some cops change from being total a-holes to Mr. Tompkins within 2 minutes. It was an entirely different set. But that CBS card, though, has saved me a million times.
I cannot tell you how that story makes my blood bubble.
I'm telling you, man. I mean, they had taken us, me and my wife, down to the precincts. They were going to arrest me. They told me I was a drug dealer. I said, man, I don't know what you're talking about.
What bothers me about this is with such a confident tone, he had the nerve to look at you and say, you've done this before. You're a drug dealer we've been looking for.
Yep.
Does he really have somebody else that he's mistaking you with, or is he just being a racist a-hole?
Oh, yeah. Well, they searched the car. They had the Mercedes all jacked up.
Seems like the latter. Is what it was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we stayed down there half a day. You know, because I thought that there were going to be some things that, you know, that I couldn't understand why they would have me arrested and have no warrants and have anything going on with it. The only problem was I was driving a brand new Mercedes. Yeah, that was the problem. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That is what it is.
And got busted. Well, hey guys, I have really enjoyed this week. I didn't get a chance to say all the things that I wanted to say. I probably shouldn't have, because I was a little upset today because I've gone through a few things with a couple of projects that I was dealing with, and some of the same people that were cursing me are now bowing and saying we all hope to die partners. But I'm used to that. You know, that's the business. Everybody always runs to the train when the train is pulling off.
There you go.
Yeah.
Your train's pulled off a time or two.
Yeah, my train's pulled off a time or two. I'm going to, you and Tony, thanks for coming by.
Absolutely.
I'm going to have you back. I want to talk to you more. I want to see what happens with that case, too.
Absolutely.
And I try to stay away from political things, but man, it's tough. It's tough.
Trust me, I am exactly like that.
Yeah, it's tough. God bless everybody. You have a good Sunday. Talk to you.